all your purchase orders are heretofore canceled. You do whatever it takes to make sure you make payroll. And if you can't sell it, nobody's going to be happy.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Breakout CEO Podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Holman, and I am here today with Jim Tracy. Jim has a really long background. We'll get into some of that, but I'm not going to try to tell you everything he does, except to say he flies airplanes and jets, and I'm sure that'll come up at some point while we're talking. Jim, it's really good to have you here on the show.
It's awesome to be here, man. I'm thrilled to be here. It's a treasure.
Oh, it's fantastic. It's so good to talk with smart people who've done really cool stuff in business and in life. You know, yeah. We were just talking in some of our kind of precursor questions, and you are not, you're not one of those guys who's just business, who just sits down and does business and family happens outside. Clearly you're somebody who is balancing a lot of things. And from what I've, you know, talked to you briefly, at least, it sounds like you've got, some really good priorities going on that your family is probably really happy with.
Yeah, I think that, well, when you have as many kids and grandkids as I do, you better add some balance. Otherwise, you're getting in trouble pretty quick.
Yeah.
I just juggling birthdays, man. It's enough to keep your calendar full.
you need an executive assistant just for the birthday calendar.
Right. You know, that brings up an interesting point. A lot of people ask me what the most important thing I did as CEO was. And I would sit down at the first of every month, and I would write a birthday card, a handwritten personal birthday card, to each and every employee of our organization. Oh, and really? I have literally had grown men come up to me and throw their arms around me and hug me and let me know that they hadn't gotten a birthday card before. And
really,
and I still to this day, I get people who come back to me and they're like, you know, it meant so much to us when you did that. And so any CEO out there, if you want to develop a culture in your family, in your business family, you let them know that you love them. And one of the ways to do that is have your executive assistant put together the envelope for me. You go find out something about each and every employee and jot them a note, man. It means the world to them.
Oh, I haven't heard anybody say that suggestion before. Yeah. It reminds me though, my wife reconnected with some family who didn't know that her grandma had been born from a family in Greece. He was here in the US temporarily, you know, 20 years he was here.
Yeah.
Had a wife, had a child, gave the child up for adoption. Anyway, we reconnected and we're like, Hey, we're part of your family. And they had no idea.
Yeah.
But we connected eventually with essentially a great uncle in who lives in Toronto now. He lived. We met him briefly before he passed, and he ran like a lot of the Greek community there. It's just very influential in the Greek community. But we went to lunch with him the first and only time that we met him in person. Uh-huh. We went to lunch with him, and it was us and him and his wife and his wife's niece and husband. Anyway, they treated us fantastic. A bunch of Greek food. If you've been to Greece, you know how much food was sitting on this table for six of us. It was like food for 20. But this man came up, and I'm sorry to go off on a tangent here, but your story about the birthday cards reminds me. This man was sitting just... And we had an early lunch, and they were elderly, and it was their lunchtime. So we were sitting there, and there's this other elderly man and a, you know, friend or somebody sitting at a booth back there. Eventually, this man who must have been 6'5", you know, 320, comes up and he says, you know, "Hi, Kostas." That was his name. And he was probably 5'4" or something like that. And he goes, "Hi, Kostas." And Kostas just reaches over, grabs his hand, just holds on to it, kind of like you picture maybe the Godfather holding on to somebody's hand. Uh-huh. Like, and this man just broke down, and he just said, "I have to tell you," like it was so important to him. Kostas was so important to him that he wanted to tell us, random people who he didn't know us. He just wanted to tell whoever was sitting at the table with Kostas what an impact Kostas had on his life. I think he was like the editor or owner of a Greek newspaper and whatever else had happened. And so your story of that, where, you know, a grown man coming and expressing emotional gratitude for what's happened, I had this distinct picture in my mind of Kostas and this larger man. And he literally broke down in tears because it meant so much. Have you seen things to that kind of that level? Is that what you're talking about when you say
I am that? Yeah. And that, what a cool picture that you just painted with that. I can't help but think about, you know, as I look across the generational, and they call it a generation gap, mm-hmm. At what we would call affection, they might call connection, but it's the same thing. It's the same thing. And I often, like when I talk to groups, invariably there's a difference in the age demographic of the group. Yeah. And what I tell them is, like, my grandfather was born in 1903, and my youngest, now my great grandson, will be born in 2026. Mm-hmm. Look at the span of that generation. I've got more generation gaps than they've got birthdays.
Yeah.
And as I look at that, I've gotten along with every generation. We don't have to not get along just because we're a little older, a little younger. We can actually choose to create connection. And it happens through things like birthday cards and hugs. It's just so simple. And when we listen, it makes all the difference in the world, especially as old guys have to learn to be generous listeners.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Well, what was give us maybe some context. What was the setting, or when did you find yourself as a CEO sitting down to write these birthday cards? What, tell us more about the business or the businesses that you've been running over time and had the pleasure of working with people and giving them birthday cards.
Yeah, well, with the birthday card specifically, we started a telecommunications infrastructure business where we constructed and maintained wireless infrastructure primarily in Washington okay. State. And I walked out in the shop one day, and there was this kid I didn't know. And I said, "Hi, can I help you?" And he looked at me, and he kind of got a smirk. He's like, "I work for you." I'm like, "Oh, this is terrible. I know everybody and I don't know you." And then we had two locations, and so there was more people at the second location that I didn't know. So I decided we had to connect with them. And one of the ways to do that was birthday cards. Another way, because you have to find out, in order to write somebody a real birthday card, you have to do a little research on who they are and why they're there and where they came from and mm-hmm. et cetera, what they do and who they hang out with. So, but also it led me to start what we called Legacy Radio. And we had a 15-minute live call-in radio. We called it a radio show. It was via conference call, but we called it Legacy Radio, and they would come in and I'd do a little safety talk, and then we'd go live with questions and answers for me and my partner, my son Ryan, but it was primarily me, and we would just like give people our heart for why this was important. And, you know, I'll never forget one time I was on the phone with, and at this point we had, you know, 125, 150 people. And one of the guys felt that what he did wasn't important. I'm like, "Time out, man. When we started this business, 40% of all calls that went to 911 were made on a mobile device. And now at that point, it was 80%. So you're saving lives. So you might think you're shoveling today, but you're not. You're actually saving lives." And so when we get to approach people with a very transparent perspective of why we do what we do, and then just love them. Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting. So you're doing this radio show or call-in conference call for your team internally.
Just a quick note about our guests. I host the Breakout CEO podcast to share behind-the-scenes insights from scaling businesses. As an attorney, I see the real challenges leaders face long before success becomes public. But client stories have to stay confidential, so we invite guest CEOs to share their own moments of struggle and success. I'm so grateful to our guests and my team at Intellectual Strategies for making this show possible. Now, let's get back to the show.
Well, and then it went bigger than that. So that the live part was really funny because this guy, Scott, we call him Mac Daddy G. So he was kind of the producer of it. And he said, "Yeah, boss, I don't want you to go live." I said, "Why not?" And he said, "Well, people are going to ask you questions you aren't going to like." And I'm like, "I think I can handle it." So very first day, somebody gets on and they're like, and you know when they don't know you well, because it turns into Mr. Tracy. So they're like, "Mr. Tracy, I was wondering what you make." And I said, wow, great question. How much do you make? And he said, well, I don't want to say in front of all these people. I said, me neither. Next question.
It worked
but,
out.
But then we merged into another set of companies by virtue of private equity. And then it became a live recorded version with then we added video to it. And because it went across four time zones, now we can't do live, but now we're adding video to it, but we're explaining to them why we do what we do and why safety is important to us and why the quality measures that we take serve our families, because then our customers love us and then we can go back and ask for more work and they give it to us and things like that. So at the end of the day, that program called On Radio is what kind of brought me full circle into actually loving sitting in front of a microphone and connecting and impacting people's lives.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause you do your own podcast now. Is it 350 episodes or somewhere in
The current one that includes Legacy Radio and On Radio, but the current one, we're 100 episodes in. So.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah. That's fantastic. Yeah. Well, so give me a flavor for what's the breadth or kind of the range of businesses that you've been involved with and led throughout your career?
I kind of look at it as three separate and distinct careers. Okay. And the first one was very short, but I learned so much. I had a beautiful man as a mentor. His name was Leroy Lundell, and his son Tom was also my mentor. And they taught me so much about business. And in a year and a half, they taught me more than I learned in 4 years in business school. So, and it was all practical. And so I owe them so much. We actually took flexible materials like foam and sponge rubber and gasketing and materials like that. And we cut them, die cut them, and formed them for original equipment manufacturers like John Deere and Whirlpool and people like that. But they taught me more about how to have a business perspective that was long-term. Hmm. And then I got into construction products as a manufacturer and learned how to actually sell into the distribution channels, something that you manufactured. And that took me out to the Pacific and to the Pacific Rim, where we sold in Japan and Korea, and did a lot of that for, there's about 20 years of making sure that that America was getting built right, and then Japan was getting built right, and so those engineered wood products, that's what I was doing, and my son was kind of enamored with the tower business, and he asked me to come out on job site, and I did, and I came out to his job site, and I had done towers when I was a kid for power lines.
Cell towers, those types of towers?
Those were for power lines. The new ones were for cell towers and things like that and public safety and things like that. Radio broadcast, yeah.
Yeah.
And so the new version of it was cell towers. I went out to his site and they were not doing much safe. And so I challenged him a bit and I sunk my spurs into him pretty deep one night saying, you got to quit this, man. Somebody's really going to get hurt. And he said, well, if you're so smart, let's do it ourselves. And that launched literally at our dinner table, a little company called Legacy Telecommunications. And that's gone from one company to now eight companies together that are banded together under a private equity Ontivity banner. And I'm still an investor. I'm no longer actively involved in that. I'm retired to work harder doing books and speaking and things like that. But it was a fantastic business. It just really was. And we hit it at the right time. Better be lucky than good.
So were you most influenced by your son saying, let's start a business? But you had a business before, the engineered wood business, right? Mm-hmm. So at what point did you say to yourself, man, I think I could run my own business? Is it because you had great mentors at that first career stage that you had, or was there something from your childhood where you just, you were drawn to it?
I don't know, man. I have just always had the itch to do it myself. And having that, I think I would say rather than saying I was naturally an entrepreneur or anything like that, I would say that I was expected. We came from a family of eight kids.
Okay.
And you were expected to be a leader. And so we had seven boys and one girl in are my siblings. And in each and every case, all of my brothers and my sister are leaders in their respective fields. And it doesn't matter whether it's healthcare, education, the retail grocery business, or software as a service, anything that we've done, they've all, I mean, I've got brothers in four different fields who have led the trade organization for their entire industry. And they're all four different industries. So I guess leadership is the word that I would use, was expected of us. I would say my mom, as much as anybody, expected that.
Is that a retrospective that you're like, are you just looking backwards and saying, man, we all became leaders and it probably came from these things? Or was there actual discussion growing up? Because I come from a family of seven kids. There are four boys and three girls in our case. So you guys beat a little bit on the boys and the total numbers. But, you know, I look back and, you know, we got smart siblings and so, but I'm not sure we ever had a conversation in our family that said, hey, you know what, you need to be a leader. You need to lead out. So is this just looking back, or was there actual conversation at the dinner table, or, you know, when you're doing your chores out in the yard, whatever, and they're like, hey, Jim, you got to learn this, because one day people are going to rely on you.
Yeah. You know, I remember conversations with my grandfather, who had incredibly high expectations for me. And those were individual, but I can remember my dad. You talk about the dinner table. I remember him saying, I don't care if you dig ditches, but you better be the best ditch digger that there ever was. And those type of conversations were real. And then he would volunteer us. He had a fellow that got hurt on a farm, and we were expected to go out and do the farm labor. I mean, I had no experience doing it, but if you're going to shovel manure, you better be the fastest manure shoveler. And that's what we did. And then we picked rock, and this sled would go along this pasture, and you would pick up rocks and put them on the sled. And it didn't, I was on the younger side, but I was expected to keep up. And so it was more than just hard work. I would say it was leadership and an expectation of your own performance, and looking internally that was crafted in us. So I guess that's the only way I can explain it.
Just innate part of being in the family.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense. Yeah. And it seems to have worked out that everybody caught on to the gig, and they're pulling the weight.
Oh yeah. And I don't want to short suit my sister Connie in any way, shape, or form. She was a mom and raised up all of her kids. And then she went back to college and got a master's, and she created the Battle Creek, Michigan, math and science center, and did some of the most, the teaching and the administration, some of the most gifted students in the state of Michigan. Wow. And she led that from its inception all the way through until she retired. So it's something that I think it was expected of us. And hopefully at the end of the day, we can look and say, hey, mom, dad, we made you proud.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure you have. What's a way that some of those maybe childhood lessons or, you know, practices have shown up in your business? Where have they... Yeah. Because this is all, you know, the podcast that we're on now is all about helping CEOs who are trying to grow businesses. You know, they come up on these obstacles that we already talked about in our other segment about turning obstacles into opportunities, really breakout moments, right? Mm-hmm. Is there a way that some of these characteristics or these experiences you had growing up have led to breakout moments in your business?
I think so. I think if you look at a really pragmatic way to build a great culture in business is to simply be kind. Mm-hmm. And being kind doesn't mean you have to be soft. And being kind, it doesn't mean you have to be, you know, a marshmallow. It means that you have to be honest and truthful and do the kind of things that you'd want done to you. It's kind of the, you know, JCPenney's golden rule, do unto others. And as I look at that, even though that's true, there were high expectations especially going forward in a pretty competitive business, that crafted in me a desire to create high expectations for my people. Mm-hmm. And the benefit then, the greatest benefit to me, I took people who had high school educations and we built them into homeowners and taxpayers and successful people who got, we've created a few millionaires simply because they got management incentive plan that they cashed in when the business sold. And it's been a wonderful experience, but that wouldn't have happened if we weren't kind. And by kind, that includes high expectations for you, because I want you to perform at a level that serves your family, that serves so your children will look at you and be proud of the work that their dad does. It doesn't matter whether you're sweeping a floor, climbing a tower, or, you know, programming a radio. All three of those are equally important. And I want your kids to be proud of you, because you better have the cleanest floor. Like my dad said, you know, be the best ditch digger, be the best floor sweeper, be the best radio programmer, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. Man, I was going to ask you, maybe you've answered the question, but in case anybody else has the same gap that I've got at the moment, because I think about kind and growing up with, you know, six other brothers and a sister, like being kind. At some level, being kind to your sister and being kind to your brothers are two different worlds, right? Being like punching your brother in the arm is probably a kind gesture a lot of times.
Sure.
But it's not kind. So, but I was wondering as you're explaining that, because, you know, we have different businesses have different educational levels for their employees, mm-hmm. different socioeconomic levels, different cultures, different languages, whatever it might be, right? Grow up in different environments even. And when you say be kind, I was wondering if there's really a universal language to being kind, because, you know, for some people, I think today in today's world, especially if we start talking like political types of things, which we won't, but you get people who look at two sides of the same situation and see it differently. Yeah. But as you explain that, you might have answered the question about the universal language of kindness as maybe not just giving people expectations to do well, but letting them see that you think they can do that well. Is that part of what you're saying?
It is. And I know that it becomes apparent mostly when I give a speech, and I do a lot for corporations, and it's invariably you see the old people are on one side of the room and the younger people are on the other side of the room, and there's an aisle between them, right? There's an impenetrable space. And I always ask the question, is respect given or is respect earned? And most of the old folks say it's earned, and most of the young folks say it's given. And I'm like, you're both got this dialed in perfect. But what if we earned respect before it was given? And what if we gave respect before it was earned? If that was in fact true, then we could kind of meet in the center of that aisle. And somebody who wanted to earn respect would already be gifted some, and he'd try harder to earn it. And if somebody who wanted to earn your respect was given before, it's amazing that we have allowed. It used to be that we would have like an apprenticeship world or apprenticeship model. So even if you were a stockbroker, you went in as someone's helper so you could watch them, observe them, emulate them, and then hopefully they would craft you into a person who had this amazing career. And we've gotten away from that because everybody wants to crawl over the top of each other instead of give each other a helping hand. Frankly, I'd rather give a helping hand. It's way more fun to help somebody else succeed than it is to like trample them. And and if you want to call that kindness, okay, I'll call it. Yeah, that's part of being kind. Just doing. I'll never forget my son and I were trying to get on the contractor bandwagon of a large multinational wireless carrier. And we went into a meeting and there was a whole bunch of people on the other side of the table and this 40-year-old and this 18-year-old sitting on this side of the table. And one of the guys on the other side of the table was trying to challenge my son. He says, well, how do you get your people to keep their quality up? And Ryan said, we ask them to do the right thing. And they weren't satisfied with that. He says, well, what if they don't know the right thing? And Ryan said, well, then we tell them to do the best right thing. Yeah. And that wasn't good enough. He said, well, what if they don't know the best right thing? And he said, well, then we give them one of your phones and we ask them to call us. And it's so true in that if we can just reach out and tell people that we have high expectations for them and that we'll help them, that encapsulates everything you need to know about business success.
Over the years, when I've gone to events, I noticed a shift, and because I love that you're talking about kindness or respect in terms of, you know, is it given or earned? Mm. And as you're explaining that, I'm thinking of it as where does it originate, right? And you're suggesting that they both should originate internally,
yeah,
rather than waiting for it to originate on the other side of the table, so to speak.
Exactly.
And it reminds me of, I've been in audiences and organizations where I remember going in as the new guy, yeah, and I'm always like, why don't these people who have been here, you know, these so-called quote elders or whatever, right? Why don't they reach out to me as the new guy and like, yeah, bring me in? And then, you know, fast forward years, and now I've been in these groups for a long time, and I'll watch somebody new walk in and I'll be like, they really should do a better job at reaching out. They're the new guy, you know? And it's so like, in some ways I've been very externally focused. It's like, it doesn't matter which position I'm in, it's their job, yeah, to reach across the aisle, so to speak. And it's absolutely not the way to do it. You know, yeah, I've realized this about myself, and that's exactly what you're describing, is reach across from your side to the other side. Don't think that the other side has to reach across to you first.
Yeah. And it's nothing bad that people are doing. They're just kind of exercising human nature. Well, sometimes human nature can take a negative slant and we have to course correct. And that's,
yeah,
you know, I talk a lot about flying. If you just flew in a straight line, it'd be awesome, but you'd forget about the curvature of the earth. You'd forget about wind. You'd forget about gravity. And pretty soon you'd be a smoking hole at the end of a plowed field somewhere. So you have to course correct, and those little corrections that you make and just subtle little turns, all of a sudden now you don't have to make big corrections because you find yourself 20 miles off course.
Yeah.
And those are true not only in aviation, those are true in business. And it's just being sensitive and self-aware and situationally aware more, and to your first point, more to your gut than, yeah, to your KPIs.
Yeah. Is there a time in your business where you caught yourself way off course? And if so, what did you do to get back on course? Because a lot of people, you know, over time you drift and all of a sudden you're like, man, I thought we were doing really well. I didn't think I needed to spend on XYZ. And, you know, it's been a year and I'm like, we're not hitting revenues, or our team's falling apart. Yeah. Or you finally realize something happened. You're like, what was I doing? That was a dumb idea. Now that I see it, how do I fix it?
And it always goes back to the fundamentals, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm sitting and I'm going
to, goes back to pair, really, like, right? Pair for flying. Yeah. P-A-R-E.
P-A-R-E.
Take the, right, blindfold off and start with the fundamentals.
Yeah. Start with the fundamentals. But we've got this cool business going and I'm really happy because I set it up where we would grow at 15% per year with a 15% earnings. And that way we could finance our own growth and we didn't have to rely on leverage. And it was awesome and we were doing great. And then I found out that my largest customer, who happened to be my only customer at the time, mm-hmm, was in merger talks with another carrier. And they said, oh, by the way, all your purchase orders are heretofore canceled. And then you're in a full sales scramble because for 2 months you've got no work and you've got people who are relying on you to go to the grocery store.
Yeah.
And so that's a lesson in customer concentration that will never be forgotten. And wow, you have to course correct. That's when you do whatever it takes to make sure you make payroll and keep people going to the grocery store. So when it does start back up again, you've got a labor force.
What was your team like at that point when that happened with you?
There were probably, it was early, but there were probably 8 or 10 of us that we needed to go find something for them to do. Because if they leave, you either then are, number one, I always felt like we had a responsibility to make sure they stayed, sure, busy. So I would sacrifice margin in order to keep them gainfully employed, everybody working at least their 40 hours. And then I never minded having them work overtime because that was their way of securing, you know, bonus work. And,
yeah.
And but it was pretty awesome. But all of a sudden you got 10 guys. Now you got to find something for them to do and you've got nothing. And that will wake you up in a hurry.
How did you navigate? Were you able to resecure contracts? You know, did the merger go through? Did you have to go find new customers? Or
the merger did go through. It was VoiceStream turning into Deutsche Telekom, turning into T-Mobile USA, and so they had a dramatic shift in, but they came in back in with capital after 2 months, and we started building like crazy. But in that other time frame, we found some work for the county, and we built a garage at my place, and we did whatever. We poured a lot of concrete, and we did whatever it took to keep everybody at the grocery store.
Yeah, those construction companies are like, if I just got to keep them busy on a job and not make any money, it's better than losing them. Especially when you're small, because when you're big, you know it impacts more people, right? Mm-hmm. But when you're small, even the impact on one person is a bigger. Overall percentage impact in the company. So there's kind of give and take depending on what your business is like. So,
and you know, it has a greater impact when you're small because the opportunity for your wife to meet their wife at that grocery store is pretty significant. and if you're doing your job, they're both there happy.
Not avoiding each other down one aisle. And yeah. Yeah. No, that's interesting. Well, how else have you seen successes in your business, either through kindness or respect, or you know what are if you were starting a new business today? I know you're kind of just you've done your businesses, you're investing, you're hanging on, you're speaking. But if you were to start a business today, if you were speaking to a room full of people who are starting businesses, they're behind you, maybe a ways behind you. Mm-hmm. What would you say would be the takeaways that you would suggest for them to think about as they're starting that business, going through that 6 to 10 phase or that 1 million to 5 million phase? Like,
yeah.
What are those levers they should be thinking about that maybe they wouldn't think about until they run into a customer concentration issue or something?
Yeah. Well, you know, on a day-by-day basis, I'm involved with one of my grandsons right now. He's 22-year-old and he started a business called Canine Meats. And he takes beef organs and he takes all the bacteria out of them with a really cool proprietary process that he developed, and he freeze dries them and they're for sale at retail. And so I'm on the phone with him on a daily basis. Number one, I would say make sure that if you're dealing with something where there's intellectual property of any kind, protect yourself because it's a copier's market and they'll come after you. But number two, be technically illiterate or to be technically literate. Not illiterate, literate, so that you can use all the tools at your disposal and readily. But perhaps more important than any single thing is if you cannot sell whatever it is that you produce, whether it's goods, whether it's services, whether it's B2B or B2C, if you can't sell it, nobody's going to be happy. And I mean the people that you work with, the people that work for you, the people who invested in you, it doesn't matter. You have to be able, especially as the leader of that business, if you can't sell it, nobody should be able to.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you got to have that belief in your, not just the markets there, but you got to be the guy who knows how to sell it, the lady who knows how to sell it. So,
you know, and we focus a lot of times, especially in the investor pool class as someone, hey, I have to be able to stand on an elevator and give my pitch. Well, that's more true in sales than in anywhere that you go, whether it be through distribution or whether it be direct to retail, or whether you're, you know, a DSD or something like that, or whether you're selling to the Fortune 500 companies. If you can't inform people what you do on a really, really brief and compelling way, then you probably should go to work on that.
Yeah. Or if you're in an industry where the entire industry can't sell it, I'm thinking back about NFTs and stuff like that. It's like, well, what is that? Is that a real industry? What's going on? Yeah. I don't know if those are still out there or not. I don't hear much about them though these days.
I don't know. All I know is that when the people at Kodak said that we're staying in the film business because that electronic stuff will never work, they probably made a poor decision. So be looking ahead too.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Well, this is awesome, Jim. I really appreciate you coming on and spending some time with us, sharing. Maybe give the audience a little bit, because we might have some people out there who say, "I really like what Jim's saying. How do I hear more of what he's got to say?" Either, you know, reading one of your books or getting you in to speak with him. What would that look like?
Well, I think probably the easiest way to hook up is thejimtracy.com. Pretty easy website, Jim Tracy, because there was a guy who's a Colorado Rockies baseball coach who's more famous than me. So I'm the Jim Tracy. Maybe should be the other one, but YouTube or Amazon, Building Men is the name of the book. And yeah, pretty easy to find.
Tell me a little bit. I did mean to ask about that book, so I'm really glad you brought it up. Tell me a little bit about the book.
Okay. I found that as I looked back across my life, there were individuals who invested in me in a significant way. Mm-hmm. So, and they didn't have to, certainly. They didn't, a lot of times didn't have the time or the energy, if they did anyway. And they gifted me with certain either skill sets or characteristics that made my life better and made the people around me's life better. And so my way to say thank you and to share those messages and to share those character traits like integrity and I got a whole list of them, encouragement. And there's a teacher that I talk an awful lot of, and my brothers are in that book and or my siblings, I should say, and my kids even. So there's literally six generations of people in that book. And all those character traits point to one or two individuals and say, if you do what they did, it will help someone.
Yeah. Well, I love that.
Yeah.
You've really brought in the family aspect of this, even from our earlier questions through explaining your book. I mean, that's clearly a central part of your life is building this for your family. Like I mentioned before, some people build their business for the wealth or the money or the financial independence, or even sometimes they say, you know, for my family, but we all know it's not for their family. They're building it for themselves in some fashion, but you seem to really have a hyper focus on the family side of it in a genuine way.
I really appreciate you not only saying that, but noticing it. I will never forget the time. It was a tough time when there were tough times coming up in our business. And my son came to me one time and he said, do you know why you're my best partner? And I'm like, I'm your dad.
Yeah.
He said, no, you love me more than money. And I'm that's what business should be about. Because if we build cultures where we love the people there, regardless of whether they're our son or not, if we love the people who actually empower our businesses more than money, can't help but win.
Man, I love that. And it brings us back to, you know what? We probably all better start writing birthday cards to those people around us. Just learn about them, figure out something that they like or that's unique and recognize them when there's an opportunity to do that. So you brought us full circle, Jim.
All right. Well, thank you, man. I appreciate you so much having me on.
This has been fantastic. I really appreciate it. And if I'm ever up in, you're in Eagle, Idaho, right?
Yeah. Boise area.
Boise area. If I'm ever up at that way and you need someone to fill a seat in one of your jets, just let me know.
All right. Well, thanks again, man. Appreciate you, Jeff.
It's been fun. Thanks, Jim. That's it for the show, guys.
Be sure to follow or subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. And if you enjoy the show, a rating or a review goes a long way. Our mission is to promote the stories of breakout CEOs in scaling SaaS, e-commerce, and tech companies to equip peer CEOs with valuable perspectives and confidence. Thanks again for joining us on this episode of The Breakout CEO. I'm Jeff Holman, and I'll see you next time.